our client does not own the property yet. They're considering buying, which is often what we do. It's very leading edge for a new development. It's common for someone who's considering buying a property to hire us to research on the property to see what unexpected expenses could be incurred as we go through the permitting process.
Well, that makes sense, because that way they don't get stuck with a piece of property that they can't deal with.
The proverbial swampland.
And we're not talking about Washington here.
Very true.
So now, in terms of what you've done already, tell me a little something about your property. Did you walk the property? Did you take lots of pictures? What did you do to see whether or not it could be used? It's obviously a very commercial area.
Our typical process on any project is to walk the property, if possible, which is always helpful, acquire a detailed survey of the property, including unexpected surprises that are not visible, underground obstructions, easements, or other rights that entities such as utilities or other property owners may have to the property. There may be an access easement across the property. There may be an underground utility line that doesn't have any markings on the property. Things that visually you would not know exist that greatly affect where buildings can be located, where driveways can be located, stormwater ponds, etc. And then we go through a series of preliminary permit application packages that tell us what will the cost charged by government agencies be for traffic capacity, which can be hundreds of thousands of dollars of unexpected expense. Are there any environmental concerns, whether it's wetlands, endangered species, or contamination on the property? All of those create expenses that don't provide a return on investment for the cost of construction.
And is it required as part of construction insurance or property owner insurance, or is it just prudent on the part of the purchase?
That's the scary thing. There is not a mandate to do this before someone buys a piece of property, nor is there a mandate for a seller to disclose some of these things. Because it's not considered a problem if you have endangered species on a piece of property or wetland. So they don't have to disclose that. If there's something negative that is required to be disclosed, then it will be. But there's many things that can cost, add to the cost of a development that do not have to be disclosed when buying it. That's the value of the services that we provide on top of providing plans that can be constructed when it's done.
When you're trying to optimize a piece of property, sometimes it's the number of parking spaces or it's how much will fit on the land and in the space around the constraints. And you were saying that actually it's pure geometry that comes in handy when you're trying to figure this out. Are you mindful of all those grim high school math classes you had to take?
Yes. It's interesting because frequently people who do not develop property on a regular basis will say, oh, well, I want to put a 20,000 square foot building on this big piece of property. How much will that cost to design and permit it? And it's like asking, how much is this vehicle? But I'm not going to let you test drive it or see the inside of it. You don't know what the condition is of the vehicle, whether it's torn apart and barely drivable or if it's brand new on the inside. It could have a new paint job on the outside and be nothing on the inside. And so we try to get to the insides before somebody buys a property, because while it looks like a 20,000 square foot building may physically fit on the property, if there's a utility line running across the middle that we cannot move, then that cuts in half the size of the building that will fit on the property. Horizontally will it fit, but there's many other impediments. For instance, if there's a wetland, if you don't affect the wetland, if you build around it, that's an easier, less time-consuming, lower-cost project than if you affect 1 square foot of that wetland. It instantly increases the time and cost to acquire the permits, even if you build the same building. It's a matter of where you put building, and it's those thresholds that throw up additional permitting, additional cost that is not known when someone says, well, here's a piece of property, how much will it cost to design a permit, a building on it?
Can you see whether or not there's wetlands on a piece of property? In this particular instance, you have a lot of experience on this road. I mean, you probably know what the likelihood of wetlands are in this particular environment. How else would you estimate or would you be able to figure it out? Can you see it or do you have to test for it for wetlands?
Often you can see wetlands because It's based on visual factors, such as the type of vegetation and the presence of water. But it's also based on the type of soil. And that sounds easy enough. Okay, you dig up a handful of soil and look at it. The trick comes in whenever somebody years ago filled a wetland in with a foot or 5 feet of good fill dirt and planted plants on it, or let the vegetation grow naturally. It looks like an upland, but when you dig through that topsoil layer, you find out that it's covering a swamp. And it's that soil that says, oh, this used to be a wetland and somebody's filled it in and didn't report it. And so it's that investigation, that research that we do, that says it looks like a good piece of property, but it's really a sheep and wolf in sheep's clothing.
Can someone create wetlands? Like, I know this piece of property across the road, there's a retention pond. It's very pretty, and the houses around it are probably inside it. But could that cause a problem?
Yes, wetlands can be created intentionally or accidentally on a piece of property.
And what would happen as an accident?
Well, when you put dirt on a piece of property and it's higher than the ground sloping to it, then the water that's normally draining from one direction to another gets dammed up and starts ponding on the property. That will, over time, create a wetland. It's artificially created, but it becomes, as the laws are currently written, it becomes property, or at least control, by the state and federal agencies, depending on how big of an area it is.
That sounds like it's just ponding, though. That doesn't sound like it's an actual retention pond that would cause somebody a problem if they were lower topography.
Ponding can dam up water crossing property lines, which is illegal, but it still happens. And it can cause wetlands to be created on properties not even owned by the ones who create the wetland unintentionally. The other thing that's created when you build a pond on purpose or a ditch with a little swale, when that's created, that it's man-made, but it's made to hold or move water from one point to another.
Right.
The agencies identify that as what's called other surface waters. If you buy a piece of property with a man-made ditch or pond on it and you want to fill the ditch or modify it or even use it, then there is an additional cost to do so.
It perhaps is just safeguarding people against a potential problem in the future.
It's well-intended. Sometimes the regulations are interpreted differently by different individuals, depending on their responsibility for upholding the laws. So the reason that a law is created is not always the interpretation in which it is enforced.
Yeah, I think we've talked about that on a number of occasions. Did you find favorably in the case of the RV and boat parking area?
We are still researching the property and submitting applications for this research phase. We've completed the conceptual plan and have prepared permit applications to make sure that it is what it looks like as far as buildable area and the cost to build however many parking spaces for the storage facility are proposed. In addition to open parking, this site will likely have a small office and an apartment for someone to stay on the property 24/7. And we're considering building some enclosed storage units as well as open parking area. Excuse me, I've got hiccups again. My goodness. And those enclosed areas, the office, the apartment, the enclosed storage, require additional permit applications and can create additional costs to the development simply by being enclosed storage versus open storage.
Is there a different process within Jacksonville for feasibility studies versus actual permits? Are they faster or are they just as long and it takes just as long to get them through? And isn't it double money for the person trying to get the project going?
I missed the first part of the question. Could you repeat it?
Oh, I apologize. I asked if, let me see, what's the best way of putting it? So does the city of Jacksonville, the building department or whoever it is, that grants the permit for the feasibility study, is that process faster than the actual permit to build with the following inspections, or is it the same amount of time? And then the follow-up question is it then double expense for the poor person trying to build the project?
The feasibility study applications take less time to review and respond to than the detailed permit review process or building permit review process. The research process is a required part of the whole process. We encourage clients to go through that research review application process first before buying a piece of property and going through the detailed design. Some clients, because of a very short timeline, want us to submit as many applications simultaneously as possible. So we will submit the research applications with a very basic site plan. And while we're waiting on the response from the city, which can still take 2 to 4 weeks, we're working on the detailed designs without having the answers to those first documents. We're making assumptions that sometimes have to have significant revisions to the plans, the detailed plans, once we get that response back. But it often will take less time to make revisions to the plans based on their response than if we were waiting to begin the detailed design until after we got the response. Does that make sense?
It does. Like, it's faster to modify than to recreate.
Yes. Assuming the engineer is competent, has experience in understanding all of the details for development, and can put all of those pieces together in the detailed plans with significant assumptions, but typically based on experience, makes most of the right decisions in those assumptions before they get the answers to the question.
Okay.
Got a client right now that I won't disclose who it is. The research applications have been submitted, and this one has a lot of unknowns. We itemized the unknowns, so we need this information to complete the detailed designs, and they said, go ahead and prepare the detailed designs based on your assumptions. And if the results of the research applications make significant changes, then we will pay you to make those changes.
Is that a win for you, or do you prefer to wait on the full landscape before you start in?
We work at the benefit of the client. Sometimes time is a higher priority than pure design cost. The cost of designing and submitting plans or redesigning and resubmitting them, it's far less expensive than the cost of construction.
Right.
So
right.
Designing something more than once still costs far less than cost of construction. It shouldn't cost even 10%. The design should not cost 10% of the construction cost most of the time. So
okay.
If we have to do it a couple of times and it saves them 2 months because of a permit deadline or a new regulation going into effect, or sometimes the property owner only has a certain amount of time before they will go on to the next person who wants to buy the property. So people will go through this due diligence and detailed design very quickly, spend more money up front, which we, like I said earlier, we don't have a preference as to which way we do it. We recommend if they have the time to spend less money by taking steps in the right order, waiting for the results of the first step before going to the next step. But that's just because that's the mentality of most property owners or most developers. They don't want to spend more money than they have to. Time is a luxury.